Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Safety Perspectives from Region 6. I've got my podcast partner and law partner, Frank Davis of the Ogletree Deacons Dallas office, here with me today. If you tuned into the last episode of this podcast, we started talking about what to do when OSHA arrives at the place of employment at your workplace. We got through the opening conference portion of the process, and today, and at some point I'm going to stop talking and give Frank an opportunity to introduce himself, but today we're going to pick up where we left off and kind of complete the what to do when OSHA shows up and does want to inspect your workplace. How are you doing today, Frank?
Doing well. Looking forward to talking about how to manage a walk around when you get past what we talked about last week. We talked about how to greet OSHA, how to have your team ready, talked about the opening conference and some of the things to expect during the opening conference, and then how to lay the ground rules for what comes next, which is the walk around that we'll discuss today.
Let's talk about the walk around process.
Yeah. So the walk around comes after the opening conference, right? So, OSHA's going to say, okay,
let me stop you there. Does there have to be an opening conference before the walk around?
Well, that sounds like a quiz question. I always have the opening conference before the walk around because I want to understand what the scope of the inspection is.
Number one, I agree with the motivation. Number two, I would argue you have to have an opening conference because you have no idea why OSHA is there unless you have an opening conference and you have the discussion that you described. Now, I apologize for the interruption, Frank. Please go on the walk around.
And I think I'm sure of it, in the field operation manual that OSHA has, the first step is the opening conference every time. And whenever you get the OSHA file, there's always the representations that the compliance officer has to make about having an opening conference. So, and I'll tell you, I think the opening conference isn't only important for the first time they come in, but if they spot another issue and they want to expand the inspection, I ask for another opening conference outside of the production area to understand what the expansion or what the expanded part of the inspection is going to be, because I want to always understand exactly what the scope of the inspection is. And again, it's my workplace. I have that right.
Let me stop you there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That actually happened this week. And the client, and I was very proud of the client, you know, they were there on a national emphasis program. And then they saw it didn't apply, and so they transitioned to a regional emphasis program. And I was like, okay, was there a second opening? Yes, we asked for a second opening. They did it. There was no issue. Had a conversation with the compliance officer. The compliance officer was like, look, your client was exercising his rights. It's perfectly cool.
Yeah, that's right. So during the walk around, that's the next part. OSHA's going to want to go, in almost every case, they're going to want to go see the area that is the subject of the inspection, no matter how the inspection arose, a complaint, accident, fatality, program inspection, whatever, they want to go see parts of the operation that are subject to the inspection. That's called the walk around. When OSHA goes out, the employer is entitled to go with them. And I haven't had a situation where a compliance officer rejected the individuals that I identified as part of the inspection team. It's kind of a similar question, though. Who do you want to go out there with the compliance officer? How much do you want to share? It's something to consider before you go out there. And for me, it's a case-by-case decision, who my strongest people are, who does the best job of doing the listening and less talking. Because anything an employer says on that walk around is an admission against interest, as we say. So if you say something to the compliance officer that could be construed as a violation or an admission of a violation, then that goes right in the file and that sticks to you. When you go out on the walk around, I'd always consider staying with the compliance officer at all times. Don't leave the compliance officer's side, stay close. If there's more than one compliance officer, you probably need more than one person to walk out there with them. Sometimes I like to staff it with somebody to interact with the compliance officer and someone just to take the same photographs or videos that the compliance officer is taking.
On that point, you know, one of the things that I think sometimes I see that I think is a mistake is the kind of rotating of people through those positions. In my mind, you know, particularly if the reason we're rotating somebody in and out of that role is shift change or whatever, the folks that line up with the different roles, whether it's the photographer or the person who's shadowing the compliance officer or whatever the role is, that person needs to stick with the compliance officer throughout the inspection to the extent possible. There needs to be one person that we can go to ensure that we know everything that happened and you know exactly what they saw, what they felt, what they heard, et cetera. And you know, swapping out people during that process to me always kind of muddies those waters.
I think that's for sure, because that person, that co-show's shadow, that compliance officer's shadow is what we'd call them, right? The employer representative that's shadowing the compliance officer ideally is seeing the same things the compliance officer is seeing, noting the same things the compliance officer is noting, and trying to replicate from an employer's perspective what the compliance officer is putting together from the walkthrough. And this is another situation where if you're missing something or you don't understand why a compliance officer is paying attention to a certain item, frequently you can ask and they'll just tell you. You know, we always suggest an employer considering replicating the exact photos that compliance officers take and taking photos of the same measurements compliance officers take. I've never had a compliance officer tell me no. And frequently they'll show me the picture they took. Sometimes they'll help me frame the exact same picture that they took. You know, it's that courtesy and professionalism. I've never had a compliance officer try to hide any photographic images or video images that they were recording. And so we often suggest employers consider replicating exactly the photographs and exactly the notes from the compliance officers.
Well, and the reason for that being that you don't have access to those photos until the inspection's closed. And so in order to know what they're looking at, particularly if you don't have counsel present, but even if you do, you aren't never going to know until you get an opportunity to, you know, duplicate those photographs and then have a chance to look at those photographs later. So yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, look, there was one instance I can think of in recent recollection, and it wasn't the compliance officer being uncooperative or you know, unwilling to allow it. He was just moving so fast, it was hard to keep up. But yeah, I've never had any compliance officer ever fuss about that. Shifting gears just a little bit though, Frank, you know, a lot of times in the course of the walk around, the compliance officer starts talking to folks. What's your position about kind of the walking interview?
I'm always concerned with the distraction. Whenever somebody new comes out on a production floor, goes out into a work site, no matter who it is, even if it's me, I'm always concerned about being a distraction. And you want to try to minimize the distractions, because if the routine changes, I think it creates a greater hazard. And so what I typically would say to a compliance officer that's wanting to conduct interviews is, it's fine if you want to conduct interviews, give us an idea of who you want to interview. And when we get a cessation in production, or we can schedule a time, we'll schedule them to come up and we'll put them into a private environment where they're not distracted and where there's not a risk of either disrupting production or creating a safety hazard by creating a distraction. And again, in most cases, compliance officers will agree with that, to schedule those interviews of rank and file employees in a time and place that's outside of production. With regard to managers, I'm going to go on and say managers. Managers, we have the absolute right to schedule management interviews at a convenient time, and then managers have the right to have somebody represented or participate in those interviews with them, whether it be counsel or another manager or another supervisor.
And Frank, from the standpoint of, you know, kind of the preparation for interviews, what have you, you know, a lot of employers are anxious about even talking to the non-managers about the interview they're going to give, et cetera. And, you know, I typically encourage employers, you know, at least let us have an opportunity to talk to them, not trying to shape what their actual answers are, but instead to kind of help equip them to make sure that they're able to tell the truth during the interview. What are your thoughts about, you know, spending some time prepping the non-managers?
I think it's important to talk to rank and file employees that are going to be interviewing with a federal officer one-on-one. I think most of them are intimidated by it. They're afraid that they might be subject to some type of citation or arrest even, or deportation in some cases. And I like to tell them, look, you can't get in any trouble doing this as long as you tell the truth. I'd feel remiss if I didn't have an opportunity to tell them that. Say, we appreciate you helping us out by doing this interview. Sometimes I'll say, I think they're going to ask you about lockout tagout, or I think they're going to ask you about excavations, just to help put their mind at ease that they're not going to be quizzed over something they don't know about. I think it helps OSHA. I haven't had a compliance officer accuse me of engaging in any nefarious activity by doing that. And candidly, I'll tell compliance officers, look, I'm going to talk to them first to let them know they're not in any trouble and that you're not going to put them in prison. And I think it's part of that politeness and that cooperation by helping lay the foundation or set that comfort level where employees feel like they can go in and talk to OSHA and they aren't going to get in trouble with the employer or with the government for doing it. And I think it doesn't hurt to remind them about some of their training, just so they're more at ease and comfortable when they're relaying that information that OSHA is most certainly going to ask them about.
You know, I don't lay it on real thick or anything like that, but I do think, you know, one of the closing comments you had there was, you know, where they're not going to get in trouble with the employer. I do tell them that, you know, nothing can happen to you in work because you spoke with OSHA and so you're safe. Are there any other tips or techniques that you would offer relative to the walk around or walkthrough?
So sometimes OSHA will ask what happened. If there's an accident, they might even ask to reenact it or demonstrate or to perform some kind of equipment demonstration or production demonstration. I think Murphy's Law comes into play in those situations, and I can't agree to do demonstrations or reenactments, because if it's, in my opinion, if it's not done during the normal course of production, if a production procedure is not done during the normal course of production, and the employer is artificially starting it up to make a demonstration for OSHA, I think human nature is, they feel like, well, I'm doing this for OSHA, so maybe I can cut corners on some of our startup procedures, or maybe I can forego some of the personal protective equipment, or maybe I can forego some of our safety precautions. I think that's a risk. So something I would consider is, instead of saying, sure, we'll do a demonstration, what I prefer to say to OSHA is, you know, we're not doing that process today, but I'm happy to let you know when we've got it scheduled next if you want to come out and see it.
So after the walk around, Frank, what's typically the next step in the process, at least in my experience, is kind of the documentation requests. And there may be the documentation that's initially requested during or after the conference, or you may be talking about, you know, documentation requests that come kind of, you know, in tranches afterwards. But when we get through the documentation collection, kind of what's the next step?
So a lot of times OSHA has a closing conference right after the walk around, and it's not the final closing conference, which confuses a lot of employers, right? Because they say, well, I already had my closing conference. They give a closing conference frequently after each phase. And a lot of times during that closing conference, they say either they found some violations that they want you to give attention to, or they didn't see anything yet, but they're going to have some follow-up. If OSHA identifies some alleged violations and suggests that you correct them, you don't have to admit that you committed a violation as an employer. But if you correct those violations, I think the rule is within 24 hours, then I think you get some deference if OSHA does issue a citation on them, and some good faith deference in terms of rapid correction. So During that closing conference, if OSHA identifies some alleged violations, it may make sense as an employer to consider whether to correct them and to notify the compliance officer that that alleged violation has been corrected. You know, a classic example is daisy chaining extension cords together or replacing extension cords that have cuts in them where the insulating covers cut. Those are classic examples of corrections that can be done quickly and notify OSHA of. But those are things that can get you some good deference when OSHA issues a citation, including a lower citation amount and the corrected during inspection under your abatement requirements. So I'd listen closely. I'd just listen closely at that initial closing conference after the walk around and try to understand where OSHA is going, if there's any immediate corrections to consider, and to begin thinking about who OSHA is going to ask for interviews, in addition to the documents you referenced a minute ago, John.
And Frank, just, you know, kind of trying to bring the bus to a stop here. Just a couple brief questions here at the end. OSHA doesn't necessarily, and you kind of allude to it, employer doesn't have a right to a closing conference per se. It's a procedural step that they can or cannot follow. And a lot of employers get a little disgruntled about the fact that they didn't perceive what happened as a closing conference, or they thought that they should have a closing conference prior to citations being issued. Does an employer have any recourse if they didn't feel that they got an adequate closing or there was no closing in their opinion? Here's the question put a little bit more concretely and in several examples that I've seen over the years. You know, there's no closing conference indicated on the establishment search webpage, no closing conference date. There's no closing conference that actually took place. The compliance officer said, you know, before we issue citations, we'll have a closing conference. Closing conference never happens. Employer receives citation packet. Is that the basis for any recourse by the employer?
In my experience,
the answer is no.
I don't know the answer to that. I can't think of what it would be because it's. I mean, what would be the remedy? The remedies don't go into effect until you receive the citation, right? And then you've got the 15 working days that start running.
Fair enough. Well, Frank, it's been wonderful podcasting with you again. Look forward to doing the next episode of Safety Perspectives from Region 6. Take care of yourself. Be well. And until next time, take care.
Thanks, John. I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.